There have been hints that the U.S. could be completely out of that much sooner than the September 11th deadline that was set by President Joe Biden.
The topic is Afghanistan. This is Wednesday, the 8th of June, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, hundreds of arrests and a worldwide sting operation. Thousands of immigrants living in the U.S. cannot apply to become permanent residents. Japan's 2020 Olympics Committee may seek more vaccine. Australia pledges to support over 170 athletes from Pacific nations to prepare for the Olympics. It is all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. troops most likely will not be completely out of Afghanistan until after July 4th. Correspondent Mike Hempen reports.
Officials say the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan is more than 50% complete. Much of it so far has involved removing or disposing of equipment, aircraft, and other war materials. The troops who are needed to secure and execute the withdrawal will be among the last to leave. As early as this week, the top U.S. commander for the Middle East, General Frank McKenzie, will provide Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin with a range of military options for securing the U.S. embassy in Afghanistan and providing counterterrorism support from outside the country once the troops are gone. Mike Hemp in Washington.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg visited the U.S. Pentagon Monday to meet with U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin. VOA Steve Miller discussed the visit with our national security correspondent, Jeff Selden.
The Secretary General said that the withdrawal is on pace, that it's on track for the early September deadline, which is similar to what we've heard from Pentagon officials as well, who have said that the U.S. portion of the withdrawal is almost 50% complete, and there have been hints that the U.S. could be completely out of Afghanistan much sooner than the September 11th deadline that was set by President Joe Biden. The focus for NATO's part of the withdrawal, though, has been on the safety of the security of its forces as they leave. That has also been on track and so far not been a problem. The interesting thing is that the Secretary General said that with all of this, there is a risk that withdrawing from Afghanistan entails risk, that there's uncertainty. And of course, there has been a lot of concern voiced by critics, both on the right and the left of the withdrawal from Afghanistan, that it's going to leave the Afghan government in an indefensible position where it and its security forces could potentially fall to the Taliban. A UN report released just last week suggested that Taliban commanders, while they talk outwardly of participating in inter-Afghan negotiations, that they've been positioning their forces so what they cannot get at the negotiating table, they can simply take with military force, and that some top Taliban commanders actually favor using military force instead of negotiations.
The Secretary General also said that the global balance of power is shifting with the rise of China and that NATO sees Russia continuing to be responsible for aggressive actions against NATO itself and its allies. What more did the Secretary General have to say?
This is a theme that Jens Stoltenberg has been echoing time and time again over the last several weeks and even going back further about where NATO has to go in order to continue to be an effective alliance. He talks about it as part of the NATO 2030 plan that he's been pitching and that will come up for discussion when NATO leaders meet next week. And a lot of that has to do with, in his words, turning NATO not just into a military alliance, but as a political platform to counter some of what Russia and some of what China are doing in terms of trying to shift the balance of power for the world. And so he's been promoting a need for NATO to come together and push back against that. And that means being not just a military alliance and standing up to Russian aggression and Russian malign activity, as he pointed to in Ukraine, as he pointed to in Belarus, where a plane the other week was forced to land. And so there's a lot that he says needs to be done. And at the same time, it's challenging because he says that with Russia, for example, NATO is pursuing a dual track policy. While they're going to contest Russia, they do not want to see conflict with Russia. And therefore, it's essential to talk and it's essential to be a strong political force on the world stage.
VOA Steve Miller talking with our national security correspondent, Jeff Selden. We continue with VOA Asia. Law enforcement officials in Australia say worldwide raids against organized criminal gangs have resulted in hundreds of arrests after a three-year inquiry using an app designed by the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports on how the operation was carried out in Australia.
Suspected members of drug trafficking gangs have been arrested in 18 countries across Asia, North and South America, Europe and the Middle East. Australia was one of the first jurisdictions to reveal the sting, codenamed Operation Ironside, on Tuesday. Police there said they disrupted drug running operations and prevented mass shootings, including a plot to attack a cafe with a machine gun. More than 200 people have been detained in raids across the country by 4,000 police officers. Large amounts of drugs, cash and some weapons were seized in an investigative operation named Operation Ironside. Australian Federal Police Commissioner Rhys Kershaw.
We allege they are members of outlaw motorcycle gangs, Australian mafia, Asian crime syndicates and serious and organised crime groups. We allege they have been trafficking illicit drugs into Australia at an industrial scale. Sadly, criminal gangs are targeting Australia because it is one of the most profitable countries in the world to sell drugs.
Since 2018, authorities in Australia, New Zealand and the United States have used an encrypted app known as Anom to track organised crime. The technology was designed by the FBI. Undercover agents distributed devices with the application to criminals, who then passed it on to their underworld associates. It allowed investigators to read millions of messages that described alleged murder plots, mass drug import plans, and other schemes. 35 people were detained in New Zealand. Australian authorities say their crime-busting raids were the nation's largest police operation. Prime Minister Scott Morrison says it's been a real success.
Operation Ironside has now charged hundreds of alleged offenders, seized millions of dollars in criminal proceeds, removed weapons from our streets and saved lives, and will continue to. It is an ongoing operation.
Australian investigators say that while the raids were successful, they were just the beginning and that efforts to combat criminal gangs would continue. They did caution, however, that while individuals and syndicates involved in alleged crime had been apprehended, there would always be someone else wanting to replace them in the illicit drug trade. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The operation termed Trojan Shield in the United States was led by the FBI, but included the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration, the European Union police agency Europol, and law enforcement agencies in more than a dozen countries. Thank you for being with us here on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. The U.S. Supreme Court says thousands of immigrants living in the U.S. for humanitarian reasons cannot apply to become permanent residents. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
A unanimous high court says federal immigration law bans people who entered the country illegally and now have what's called temporary protected status from seeking green cards. The case hinged on whether those people were actually admitted to the U.S. under immigration law. Justice Elena Kagan says they were not, writing for the court in a case that pitted the Biden administration against immigrant groups who argued many of the people in question have lived in the U.S. for years and put down roots. The House has passed a bill making it possible for TPS recipients to become permanent residents, but the Senate prospects are unclear. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Turning our attention to Indonesia, tin miners there are targeting the ocean off Bangka Island after reserves of the lucrative metal dwindled on dry land. The shift has angered local fishermen who say their livelihoods are threatened. Flora Bradley-Watson reports.
Dotted off the coast of Indonesia's Bangka Island are scores of crudely built wooden pontoons. They are equipped to dredge the seabed for deposits of tin ore. Indonesia is the world's biggest exporter of tin. The metal is all around you, from food packaging to electronics and now green technologies. But that same demand has put miners on a collision course with local fishermen. As tin reserves have dwindled on land, miners like Hendra have started encroaching on prime fishing territory.
It's getting harder to mine tin on land, so I have to mine at the sea. There are no more tin resources left on the land.
Hendra shifted to working in offshore mining a year ago and now operates 6 pontoons. He is among scores of so-called artisanal miners who partner with PT Tima. The state mining company pays about $5 for every kilo of tin sand Hendra's pontoons pump up. While it's a lucrative business for him, fishermen like Mariono have seen their profits plunge.
Jadi dampak yang kami rasakan itu sangat-sangat.
The impact for us from the mining is incredible. You can tell by the shrinking of our catch. We used to get at least 10 kilograms in a day, now only 2 kilograms. And sometimes we come back with nothing because the location has been destroyed by an illegal mining site.
This is why the miners have been pushed out to the ocean. Deposits in the mining hub of Banka Belitung have been so heavily exploited that the island resembles a lunar landscape. There are vast craters and highly acidic turquoise lakes. Indonesian environmental group WALI says the island is now risky for people to live on. The group has also been campaigning to stop mining at sea. Activist Jezik Amandian.
It's been 20 years that people have been doing illegal mining activity on land or sea. This has caused conflicts in society, especially with the fishermen. Also, more importantly, on the environmental impact, mining sites along the coast have caused damage to mangroves.
In a statement, Tima said it communicates with fishing communities to improve their catch. It says it has built artificial reefs to help restock the sea in line with regulations. Authorities have cracked down on the tin industry from time to time, particularly illegal mining. But for these unlicensed miners on the island of Banka, the lure of rising tin prices is too good an incentive to pass by.
That was Reuters' Flora Bradley-Watson. We continue with VOA Asia. Japan's 2020 Olympics Committee may seek further vaccine donations to make the rescheduled games as safe as possible. That according to Tokyo's 2020 CEO after a board meeting Tuesday, stressing there had been no talk of further delays. The Olympics have already been postponed by a year amid global concerns over how organizers can keep volunteers, athletes, officials, and the Japanese public safe when they begin on July 23rd after a fourth wave of infections. Tokyo 2020 CEO Toshiro Mutu flatly denied there had been any talk of a cancellation or further postponement at the executive board meeting. The Australian government and the Australian Olympic Committee pledged on Tuesday to support over 170 athletes from 11 Pacific nations to prepare for the Tokyo Olympics and Paralympic Games. Brian Wood reports.
Australia pledged to help athletes from Pacific nations prepare for the Tokyo Olympics this summer. Australia's Foreign Minister Maurice Payne said the Pacific Oz sports program will support nearly 200 Pacific athletes.
Ultimately, we're going to be able to support 170 athletes, Olympians and Paralympians across the Pacific, in their Tokyo preparation from 11 Pacific countries. It's about coaching, it's about travel, it's about accommodation, it's about medical support. It's about enabling participation in those pivotal, final, qualifying events.
The partnership will alleviate difficulties faced by Pacific athletes, like the cost of training and qualifying for the Olympics. Australia's head of the Olympics Committee, Matt Carroll, said he's hopeful the partnership will help athletes today and tomorrow.
By their own example, Olympic and Paralympic athletes deliver messages of resilience, commitment, hard work to the communities throughout the Pacific. The important messages of health and exercise using the power of sport to build better communities.
Although postponed last year, the Tokyo Games are set to start near the end of July.
Reporter Brian Wood. A new Senate report details sweeping failures around the January 6th attack on the Capitol building, but does not delve into the role played by former President Donald Trump. Correspondent Julie Walker reports.
Bipartisan review found broad government, military, and law enforcement missteps before the attack. It also found a breakdown within multiple intelligence agencies and a lack of training and preparation. The senators criticized the FBI and Homeland Security for downplaying online threats and for not issuing formal intelligence bulletins. The report recommends giving the Capitol Police Chief more authority, giving better equipment to law enforcement, and streamlining intelligence gathering. It does not look at root causes, including the role played by Trump, as he called for his supporters to fight like hell to overturn his defeat. I'm Julie Walker.
Thanks for joining us. Thank you to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, includes Jim Stevenson, Amy Heibels, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman. Stay safe and enjoy your day.